Hello and welcome to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm your host, Adam A. Donaldson. Joining me in a bit will be Peter Salmon to do this week's review. Oh, I think I just made it rhyme again. Oh, I apologize. But it's interesting, we will get to this week's movie in a minute, which is kind of a rerun in a sense. And I remember the first time this movie came up, way back when, nobody wanted to review it. But here we are this time, actually having kind of an easier time reviewing it. Maybe that has to do with the circumstances of, you know, COVID and all that, and not much really new and exciting going on in movies. This is kind of a big release in these circumstances, but here we are. What is that movie? I'm glad you asked. End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans. You can find us here every Wednesday at 3 p.m. as we talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the newly remastered superhero epic Zack Snyder's Justice League, which you can now stream on Crave. Now, as I said, way back in 2017, when Justice League came out in theaters for the first time, I had something of a hard time convincing one of the panelists to come along. And to come along on the Justice League journey. And if you go back and listen to that episode, the review, we outsourced it to Amy Chop, who's the manager of the Dragon downtown, who joined us for that review. And I think, if I remember correctly, we were both fairly up on it. We were both fairly positive about the film. It's by no means a masterpiece. And we'll get into this when we talk about, when we have Peter come on to talk about the Zack Snyder's edit of Justice League. It was very much a choppy movie that features two very separate but distinct filmmaking voices. But there is a long history in Hollywood of directors being taken off movies or directors going back to revisit movies. So before we get into Zack Snyder's Justice League, we're going to pause review some famous director's cuts and extended editions, some of which are easily to find, easily available, and some of them maybe not so much. But we will get to that in due course. So one of the first things that comes to mind when we're thinking about expanded editions or director's cuts, I think, is the Lord of the Rings extended cuts. You may recall, you may even have them on your DVD shelf if you're a weirdo like me and still have all your DVDs. Back when Lord of the Rings came out, they would release the theatrical cut on DVD, and then they released it, these extended cuts, which not only had new scenes put in to the films to make them longer and to pad out certain details and character moments and things, but they also had additional DVD extras. They were 4-disc packages, and they're really nice packages too, a lot of really great artwork and things. The extended editions were also very, very popular. And there are some people who will watch only the extended editions because they get more of the Tolkien details from the original book. I will note that I am more of a purist. I like the tighter editing in the original theatrical cuts. It's especially noticeable as you go on. Like, I think the Fellowship of the Ring extended edition is probably the best one because that still does feel like something that's tightly edited, even though it is longer than the original cut of the film. But I think they just get so padded later on. I think a great example is watching the ending of Two Towers, the theatrical cut, and then watching the extended cut. And then I think when you watch those two side by side, you really get a handle on the subtle art of film editing. But to each their own, even though I think we can all agree that the Hobbit extended editions were probably a bridge too far. Another famous director's cut is Blade Runner. And this is a circumstance not too unlike the Snyder cut, where the studio, oddly enough, in the same case, Warner Brothers, took the film away from the filmmaker to try and make something that was more bankable, more viable. In the theatrical cut of Blade Runner, there is a voiceover by the Harrison Ford character Deckard. That is not in the director's cut. The theatrical cut also has like kind of a more affirmative, shall we say, happy ending. The ending in the director's cut is a bit more ambiguous. The director's cut also features the scene with the unicorn and the end where Decker finds the origami unicorn. That's not in the director's, in the theatrical cut, because that is obviously a little heady for probably studio heads who are like, what's the deal with this unicorn? I don't get it. But I think that at the end, I mean, aside from those stylistic things, the story is still very much the same. It is, however, an interesting case to see how some fine-tuning changes the film. And it's also a lesson, too, that sometimes the advice of test audiences isn't always right, because that's what spurned the studio cut, is that test audiences weren't particularly fond of the choices Ridley Scott was making. For another great example, Star Wars. And Star Wars, of course, came out in 1977, and famously, the special editions came out in 1997. This wasn't just like a re-release on home video. They were eventually re-released on home video, the special editions, but they were also released in theaters, too. And in some cases, especially noticeable in A Good Hope, these are really seismic changes, adding CG to a lot of the Mos Eisley scenes and Tatooine, but also adding like entirely new sequences, like the CG Jabba confrontation. Famously, there was a stand-in for that scene. They were going to replace Jabba the Hutt with some sort of stop-motion thing. They didn't have the time or money for the special effects to finish it. So when the special editions came up, they inserted the CG Jabba, and it, I mean, there's a scene where Han Solo steps on Jabba's tail because of the logistics of when Han Solo walks around the Jabba the Hutt stand-in. The weird part is, this scene does nothing but reiterates information you got in the earlier scene with Greedo, basically. So it was just kind of superfluous from the get-go. And of course, George Lucas hasn't stopped tinkering. Famously, the last time these came out on Blu-ray was the last time they were kind of tinkered with, and George Lucas added a scene, not a scene, but a vocal effect in the scene in the throne room in Return of the Jedi when Darth Vader throws the Emperor down the reactor shaft, and before that you hear Darth Vader go, "No!" like, because the Emperor's electrocuting Luke Skywalker, his son, and it's you know, silent and a bit more tense in the original cut of it. And the most exasperating part of this, of course, too, for people who are film buffs, for people who are film historians, is that there is no sort of restored special less edition. There have been people who've done that work online, sort of independent, painstakingly creating 1080p versions of the original trilogy from the original sort of sources. I have a DVD of the original trilogy as it was originally released. It is not, however, anamorphic. It is not high def. It is standard def. So there have been a lot of people for a lot of years who have been pushing to try and get the original version of those movies released. And it's very clear that George Lucas has no desire to do that, even though he's very much about the work of film preservation. Unless it's his work, then he does not have that interest. Number four on my list here, I have Terminator 2 Judgment Day. Terminator 2 Judgment Day. And you may not think that, wait, there's a special edition for this? Yes, there are actually several special editions. And James Cameron, again, sort of a pioneer in this regard. There was the theatrical release of Aliens. And then there was, when Aliens appeared on TV years later, I guess to pad it out, to make it feel the running time a bit easier, James Cameron inserted a couple of scenes where it shows Newt and her family before the alien infestation on the colony. And, of course, that was later released on home video as a special edition Aliens. Similar thing happened for Terminator 2. There was a couple. There's been a couple of different special editions. The one that kind of is most often referred to is there's one which features a ton of new or adjusted scenes. There is a dream sequence with Michael Biehn, who played Kyle Reese in the first Terminator. He was killed at the end of Terminator. There's a scene in it where Sarah Connor and John Connor basically operate on the Terminator to make him able to learn to be more human, and stuff like that. So it's a little bit longer, but it doesn't, unlike a lot of special editions, I don't think it ruins the movie by padding it. There is, however, another special edition that came out a couple of years before, a couple of years ago, when they released a box set of when there were four Terminator movies. In this special edition, there's an extra happy ending where it's 2029, and you see the Terminator-less world, or a world where there was no Judgment Day, and Sarah Connor is an old woman watching older John Connor play with his children in a Los Angeles park, which of course flips an earlier scene on the film on its head, where you see older John Connor leading the charge against the machines. For number five here, I have Superman 2. Or let's call it the original Snyder Cut. Famously, Richard Donner was making two back-to-back Superman movies. He gets done the majority of Superman 1, and he is pulled out and replaced with Richard Lester. Richard Lester was less interested in the grandiose mythology of Superman, was more embracing of like the campy kind of comic booky elements, I guess. I'm not going to say he was interested in a less serious work, but I mean, Richard Lester was also very famous for his campy, swashbuckling version of the Three Musketeers at the time. Also, the Salkins, who produced Superman, the Superman movies until very, very recently, they produced the first four Superman movies, probably felt they could control Richard Lester a little bit better than they could control Richard Donner. Famously, there was a Richard Donner cut of Superman 2 released. It is unfinished because it was done years after. I think it was even released after Christopher Reeves died. So it is kind of an assembly cut. It feels like a working cut kind of feel, but it is interesting to see like what direction that movie would have went into. Number six I have here is Alexander, which is Oliver Stone's passion project about Alexander the Great. It was re-edited four times in 10 years. It was 175 minutes, and then it went down to 167 minutes, and then it went way up to 214 minutes, and the latest version of it was just 206 minutes, just. But I think this is kind of where director's cuts get out of hand. A bit of a reversal of that is Kingdom of Heaven, which is another Ridley Scott movie. This is a movie that came out around 2005, 2006. It's about the Crusades, and very famously, the two-hour movie, a lot of people did not like when it came out because nobody knew what was happening. Basically, it was all action sequences, and a lot of the character moments were shaved off so they can create this like two-hour running time. You go back and watch the Kingdom of Heaven director's cut, you get something that is much more, shall we say, coherent, because there are more character beats, there are more details. You find out that the Ava Green character, the whole time, had a son, which explains a lot of her motivation in the film. Not that anyone ever realized that. You also find out that the priest that Orlando Bloom kills at the beginning is his half-brother, which is kind of an important detail considering he's carrying that guilt through most of the rest of the film. Ay. Okay, number 8 is Donnie Darko, just in time for its 20th anniversary. The Donnie Darko director's cut, which is probably the cut most people are familiar with. It is kind of one of these films that like pads out the running time with a lot more quieter moments, character moments and things. Lets you sort of be able to, I guess, ring through the headier, trippier elements of the film by giving you these quiet moments where you can see characters sort of not involved in the plot and just sort of living their lives. Just to finish up here, I have The Abyss, which is another James Cameron movie. Unlike sort of the edits in Terminator 2 and Aliens, this one, I think the Abyss director's cut actually adds something to the film. And in a recent move, it's now available, Godfather Coda, which is the re-edited version of The Godfather Part 3, and it seems to be somewhat of a unanimous consent that it is an improvement on the film. I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but I am eager to. And just for to sort of round this out, too, director's cuts, extended cuts, not necessarily bad things. I think it's an issue when you kind of use it as a way to apologize for the badness of a movie. It's like, oh, you know, that's why it's bad. It's because I had it taken away from me, or the studio edited it. Ugh, I hate having to say that. Or, you know, it becomes a crutch in some places. Is Zack Snyder's Justice League a crutch, or was he right in some of the decisions he was making for that movie and creating a better movie with his cut of Justice League? We will find out after this. You are listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Better back up and withdraw, 'cause trust me when I tell you, you don't want that tooth and claw. And you don't wanna see inside a mind of a savage kind. And you don't want that recognition of, oh, there goes that guy. But if you do decide that you're gonna play that hand and try, just think before you act, because your actions don't rewind. Poisoned by the snakes in the grass, by the rats out the maze.
My lord, Steppenwolf. My lord, I am but your humble servant. Can it be true that you have found it? I have, great one. The lost world is Earth. Anti-life is here. If it is redemption you seek, find the third box, synchronize the unity, and when this world is scorched, I will come for my great prize. You will come to Earth. I have turned 100,000 worlds to dust, looking for anti-life, looking for those who robbed me of my glory. I will stride across their bones and bask in the glow of anti-life, and all of existence shall be mine.
And that was a clip from Zack Snyder's Justice League. It's the new version of the old film by Zack Snyder, and it stars Ben Affleck, Henry Cavill, Amy Adams, Gal Gadot, Jason Momoa, Ezra Miller, and Ray Fisher. So I'm now being joined on the line by Peter Salmon. Peter, how are you today?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Glad to be here on End Credits.
Well, we're glad to have you.
Yeah, good. You're lucky.
Oh,
lucky.
Lucky to have you.
No, I'm always lucky to have End Credits wanting me.
Well, I was going to say, like, someone seems to be bucking for a raise. This is a volunteer gig, so I'm not sure where he thinks the money's coming from.
Christmas gift.
A Christmas bonus, perhaps.
Oh, yeah.
But that's still several months away. We did get a gift in the last couple of weeks. If you were One of the people who is hashtagging release the Snyder Cut, and that's what we're talking about, is it's officially branded Zack Snyder's Justice League. So, Peter, were you one of those people that was hashtagging release the Snyder Cut? Were you super hardcore about that?
No, definitely not. No, I'm not. Well, I do like, I really love DC and I like a lot of the films, but no, I just because of how bad the original one was, it's just a re-edit, so I didn't have much hope. So yeah, I definitely did not tweet about it, but I really think Zack Snyder, I think he's good, and I can see why the fans wanted this, especially with all the Josh Whedon issues that happened.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I think even with the edit, it's not a very good film. It's decent. It's whatever. What are your thoughts?
I have mixed thoughts too. I think I like it because it has like at least a cohesive artistic vision coming from one person, and that one person is Zack Snyder, of course. I think one of the problems with the Joss Whedon edit of Justice League is that it was coming from two very distinctive voices that were colliding. And I one of the things I will note, though, is that there was a lot of stuff in watching Zack Snyder's edit that I thought was Whedon, but was not Whedon. There were certain scenes like when Flash meets Bruce Wayne at his lair. And I thought I could have swore that was all Whedon, but it turned out to be most of it was Snyder, and a lot of the like little lines like Flash going on about brunch, that was Whedon. Little stuff like that. But for the most part, I didn't get a chance to revisit the theatrical cut, so I don't have like a side-by-side comparison. But I mean, a lot of what I think people found wrong in the theatrical cut was kind of baked in the cake originally by Zack Snyder. And I don't necessarily think the Zack Snyder cut liberates him of any of the weird creative decisions he's made along the way for the Justice League. What I will say is that seeing his cut, it is a complete vision. We now have that like sort of series from Man of Steel to Batman vs. Superman to his Justice League. We have now seen that progression. I have zero interest in what's hashtagging now, the release the Snyderverse. I think people have a contact high from how,
like, being able to succeed on this, right?
Yes, from being able to succeed. And yeah. Like, from it being this, like, really cool thing that's popped up online and getting caught up in the, like, the social media hype around it. I think if people, I think in a few months, people will come down from that high and go, oh, yeah, there was a reason we were not super enthusiastic about Zack Snyder's vision for this universe to begin with.
Yeah, I think for the enjoyment of this, a lot of it, yeah, was just the hype and people not wanting to dislike it. So, you know, of course they liked it because they're the kind of fans that, because of course a lot of fans, you know, they really think it's going to be perfect. And then even if it's great, they still don't like it because it's not perfect. These are the kind of fans that seem they'd be okay with anything. And I think that's why, you know, it is getting a lot of love. And I'm having trouble understanding why it has such great, you know what? Here's the thing. Rotten Tomatoes, 73. But if you read around the more written reviews, like, I don't know what Variety gave it, but I know Vanity Fair and Hollywood Reporter and The Guardian did not give it phenomenal reviews. So I think that's fair. So I don't know why everyone's loving it so much on Rotten Tomatoes. I think what you said is true. It was an accomplishment in his part. Like, it's a Zack Snyder work, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's a very great Zack Snyder work. And I think a lot of the reason is I do really like Zack Snyder's work, but his flaws shine in this, right? There's a bit too much of the slow motion, like in 300. Like, it's enjoyable, but it gets a little, it's used a little too often. It's 4 hours, so there was, I'm curious how much of a time length of just that slow-mo stuff there would be. But I swear, like, I enjoy it, but it's used too much. And I do not think the film needed to be 4 hours. I really don't. I think if Peter Jackson's able to make, you know, the theatrical Return of the King less than 4 hours, I think he could have been able to do that. I think there was a lot of the combat scenes that could have been cut a bit shorter. Mm. I think the first big one with Wonder Woman and her relatives and the big bad guy of the film, mm-hmm. I thought that was way too long. I didn't think it needed to be like that. I do want to say, though, I think the physics, the physicals of the fighting was great. I think it was really well done. I'm not a huge avid supporter of their excessive usage of CGI. And like, you know, Marvel does too, but I find DC does it way more on like the actual bodies, even if it's like Flash, who's human. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just me, but yeah, I didn't like it. And they do it too for like just humanoid figures. And it's like, you don't need to do that. You can do some costume. And I don't know. Maybe it's because it was filmed. Do you know what frames per second it was filmed? Was it just like standard? Or was it like Peter Jackson kind of thing?
Wait, where, which was filmed?
Like the frames per second? Was it like the 48? Oh, or...
I'm not sure about that. No.
Oh, okay. Because it seemed a little, the combat, it seemed a little, like I said, it wasn't really enjoyable. It was really well done, but there was some visuals that were a little rocky, you know, like I could tell, oh, that's CGI. That's not real.
I think that might have to do with the time crunch and the fact that they were, perhaps they didn't have, I mean, I think they spent $70 million to restore it, which
yeah,
a lot, but it is, I think there's like a famous screen grab of Cyborg that looks really, really like early 2000s PlayStation bad.
Well, he in general, I'm not a huge fan of the Cyborg. I don't think.
Oh, I'm a big fan of the Cyborg. Like, cause I think the movie, it's interesting looking back on like the Joss Whedon stuff and, like how it was sort of Ray Fisher coming out and saying like there were some real problems on set with this guy, and now to see the Zack Snyder cut and seeing how big a role that Cyborg had originally, that's even kind of more insightful than like Ray Fisher's tweets, just to be able to like go back and see how Zack Snyder made Cyborg a much more central figure and sort of, he kind of has like the main arc of the story. Like the movie is almost Cyborg's story.
Yeah, I know. And the one scene where him and I think it's Superman and one of them, I think Ray Fisher's character, he's, you know, he's in the kind of angry mode. That was well done. Up on the roof.
Mm.
That scene was well done. I think that combat and I think that discussion. He had a couple lines though that I was just like, I'm not a fan of this guy. I don't. He's whatever. but you got to think about the script, right? And there is a lot of the classic quick wit comic book material. So you know, I'll try and view it that way. Like it was just the line, not the actor.
I mean, it is shocking. How dirty it feels like Cyborg was done by Joss Whedon.
Yes, yeah.
And because I mean there were a lot of great Cyborg scenes. Like I think the scene you're talking about where he is kind of exploring his powers for the first time while listening to this audio tape his father made, and he's flying, and then he, you know, helps the single mom, you know, but you know,
yeah.
And it, the way he walks away that scene and how it makes him feel good for an instant, but then he's like empty again. And the whole thing with his dad and struggling to understand his powers and forgive his father. And I mean, a lot of that stuff was really, really great. And it sucks so hard that, you know, it was cut from the theatrical release. And then Joss was an ass.
He's apparently fully canceled now, which is, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I really like, I like, you know, I like Buffy and I really enjoy, I liked Angel too, but, you know, I think the quality of his work is great, but the quality of him as an individual makes it not worth the viewing.
Right.
So I am glad that Zack Snyder took over. And yeah, I guess the right. I didn't like the how's this. I didn't like the writing for a lot of Cyborg dialogue, but Ray Fisher, you know, the physicals were cool, And the dad thing was, that was sweet. You know, that made me feel warm.
Yeah.
He's got to do more, though. I'm on his Wikipedia. What is he doing? He's been in like five things.
I know.
Six things. Get on it, man. What are you doing?
He's kind of been robbed. Like, this was his chance to sort of be launched, and he could be like a bigger star, a bigger actor. And it does feel to an extent he's robbed. And so perhaps this is one of the good things to come out of the Snyder Cut, as people take a second look at Ray Fisher.
I bet it feels great for him. It'd be such a relief. Your one like film to be awful, and then, you know, but, well, when does the film get like a re-edit and it's great, right? He wouldn't have expected that. So no. So how's that? Is that a positive addition for a review of the film? That hey, it made something more positive for one of the actors. You know, like that's cool, but that's not.
Yeah, well,
that can't be attributed to the quality of the film.
I think there's a lot of good stuff. Like I feel like there was Wonder Woman got a bit more agency. I think Whedon somehow, which is weird because he's, you know, well known as, you know, granted everything that's happened, but I mean, at the time he still had his creds as being sort of a feminist filmmaker. And
geez, you remember those days?
But I mean, it seems like he undermined Wonder Woman's character. In this, she's much more at the forefront. She's much more of a leader. Ezra Miller's Flash, I felt the goofiness was toned down by about 10-15%, which was just enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the introductory scene of him where he goes into the pet store to be interviewed as a dog walker, and then there's the collision outside where he meets it's not made explicitly clear in the film, but he meets Iris, who is the Flash's wife in the comic books.
Yeah.
And he saves her. And that was a really great visualization of, I guess, sort of Flash time, of, you know, slowing everything down while he sort of moves at normal speed.
Yeah. See, I am. Continue.
Well, I was done anyway, but you
have those. I really did enjoy. I know I bashed some of the visuals. There was a couple I did enjoy. I thought the Flash ones were done really well.
I think there's a scene later on too where he
he's like doing that like run so quick that it's like he's standing still and like everything's kind of moving past him.
Yeah,
the final battle.
Yeah, the time dilation thing. I mean,
that was well done.
So I mean, Cyborg, I think, gets an improvement. Flash gets an improvement.
I don't agree with the Cyborg thing, but yeah, I know what you mean. Just, I don't know why. Maybe it's because the one line bugged me, so I overanalyzed all his lines. But I don't know.
I
wasn't a fan.
We also get we get a bit more Aquaman. We get Willem Dafoe. Because technically, Willem Dafoe
was that was cool.
Here in Justice League before he was in Aquaman 2. So that was another thing that was supposed to come up.
I didn't love. Here's the thing. I really do like Jason Momoa. I don't love the visuals for Aquaman. The underwater thing is just too. It's not for me. It's just too dark, and there's not really much going on.
I think James just. Did it better in Aquaman, the underwater stuff.
See, yeah, and I that would be worth a watch. Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely loved though his scene when he was like up on the land, hanging out with kind of his clan, like the whatever they were.
and the singers who after he returns into the water and
yes, that yeah yeah. I don't know what they are, but yeah, that was cool.
The chorus line, yeah, that was.
I meant most of the part right before the chorus line. I don't know what the chorus line, but I really liked the dialogue when Batman arrived for the first time.
Yeah, no, it's.
And I thought that Ben Affleck was great. I think he's not the best Batman, but I think he's. I think he's okay. I think he's okay at the Batman that was needed in this. It truly. Truly just kind of quiet, stern one, you know, an older one. He was really great at that.
I think one of the things I appreciated was that we didn't try to put in a lot more jokiness, and Batman was also a recipient of that. So it feels like almost like a complete 180 from where he is in Batman versus Superman. So I appreciate it. It was at least attenuated a little bit better.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And he was just kind of like, spread throughout, you know. I don't even know if he got like the most amount of dialogue or anything, but he was like the most consistent throughout the whole film, you know. It was almost as if, because he is kind of the leader, it's like as if Batman was watching Justice League with us, you know what I mean? I thought that was cool.
There's so many
scenes where you just see him like just a pinch away from all the others and just kind of looking at them, judging them and whether or not they're doing a good job for his league.
it's their league too,
Batman.
I would agree with that too. I think a little Batman goes a long way. I mean, also because of like every superhero character in this movie, like Batman has been like the most filmed and the most adapted. So it's to make Batman the center of attention in a Justice League movie when you have all these new people who have never really had a movie of their own before.
Okay, that's fair.
My problem is that it does nothing for Superman, and they spend like 3 hours talking about how they need Superman, and then they bring Superman back from the dead, and there's like maybe 10 minutes of Superman time before he joins them in the final fight. And then we should definitely talk about the epilogue at some point, but
yeah.
That teaser that Superman goes bad in the future. I mean, the whole movie is about we need Superman. No, Superman is going to go bad. So we're going to have Superman issues in the future. It strikes me that Zack Snyder either mistakes Superman for Dr. Manhattan.
That seems right.
Or he doesn't get Superman, it's a personal thing. It's just one of the things I still appreciate about that theatrical cut, and I've said this many times to many people, but when I left the Joss Whedon theatrical cut of Justice League, it didn't make me want to cut myself like Batman v Superman did. You know,
and I didn't hate it, but I didn't hate it either, but
it's
pretty long too.
It's because the characterization of Superman is just way, way off. And
I thought Man of Steel was more accurate.
That's easier
to do for his early days when he is more Man
of Steel benefits from being a Superman movie. Every subsequent film has been a Superman and movie.
Mm-hmm. I thought his uncle death was done really, a really great way. I'd say even better than some of the others.
Agree to disagree, but no, the point I'm getting at is
the one thing, the death, but yeah.
The Justice League Whedon cut at least took the time to develop Superman as like a more human character. He was more warm. It took advantage of Henry Cavill's natural charm, which these movies have not done yet.
No, they didn't realize that about Superman. Yeah. It's really weird.
Yeah, and so, you know, what we get in this film, more of the same. We get more conflicted Superman. We get more guilt-ridden Superman. And then he puts on a black suit.
I was done at the end of the movie. I was done. Yeah, and the whole flash forward with him being evil is...
Right. Okay, so I do want to make sure we have that. I'm going to call it an airing of the grievances, because that scene almost single-handedly undermines every ounce of goodwill I had towards the first 3.5 hours of this movie. Because it is so dark. It is so depressing. Yeah. I know it's a proof of concept, because Zack Snyder had big plans for subsequent Justice League movies that I know for sure I don't want to see. I do not want to see the dark, disturbing Justice League future where Superman is a herald of Darkseid or whatever. I did not need more Jared Leto Joker.
He's awful. He's not a good Joker. I like him. I like Jared Leto. Not like his acting. I don't like his music, but God, he's not a good Joker. It's almost for me like as if he tried too hard, or mm-hmm. he's just too similar to, he's just like a lower version of the, it's just a cheaper version of the Heath Ledger one, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like at a dollar store, when you see those toys that are like almost kind of like Marvel or DC, that's how I viewed it. It wasn't very good. And also, it's like none of his scenes in it are real, right? It's kind of like,
it's all future.
Is it even the future, or is it just Batman having a weird dream?
No, I think it's supposed to be the future.
Oh, and the that one
when Darkseid comes in
is like helping him see that in his dream. Okay.
Yeah, it's I did not need the scene, or if you were going to include it, I didn't need it as long as it was. I didn't need this this actor's workshop of Ben Affleck and Jared Leto, where they're talking about, you know, their past and their future, and Joker's like, "Hey, remember when I killed Robin? You suck." that's paraphrasing, of course. I didn't need Batman to say, "I'm going to effing kill you," except he didn't say effing. It's just, if that scene were shorter, if that scene were just like, here's a nightmare that Batman's having of a potential future, and he's there, and Deathstroke's there, and Mira's there. That's another thing, too. Amber Heard goes back to the British accent for Mira, which is not in the Aquaman movie. She's there. The Flash is there. Batman's there. And they're trying to get to somewhere. And then you hear the little laugh. And Joker is also part of their weird team. And if it had just ended there, I would have been, that is stupid. But at least it wasn't. At least it didn't go on forever. Like this did with the whole acting class, sort of like we're doing like a 2-page play kind of experiment acting class dealy. It sucked all the energy. I mean, it was the end of the movie too, so there wasn't much energy left, but it just completely undermined the first 3.5 hours of the film. And then you get this nice little epilogue in the end where, Martian Manhunter appears to Batman, and I mean, it's funny. It's like, just the first time I saw it, it's like Martian Manhunter is like, "Hey, I'm here to help," and it's like, "Okay, after all the fighting, cool."
Yeah, because he's like an evil being, right?
Manhunter's a good guy.
At the very last scene,
The Martian Manhunter, the green guy.
Okay.
That's Martian Manhunter is usually the 7th member of the Justice League. Yeah. So it's although maybe after the nightmare sequence, it's maybe not. I did hate when he said, like, "You can call me Martian Manhunter," because I mean that's like the 50s, 60s name of the character, and it's just like, you're a Martian, okay, but what man are you hunting? That doesn't make anyway. That's a quibble, but especially since the character's name is John Johns, or John Jones, I should say. So it's like he could have just said, "You can call me John," and like that would have been wink, wink. See, he's John Jones for the comic book fans, which of course what most of that was for in the first place.
Yeah,
but I think you could have easily whittled the last half hour out of this without the whole nightmare sequence. At that point, it was Zack Snyder basically rubbing his pelvis in the face of Warner Brothers, because I don't think they wanted him to shoot any additional footage anyway, and then he did. So.
Another thing I really disliked I don't know. There's honestly... There's so many different things.
There's so much dislike I can't remember.
I would have been okay, like what we were discussing. I would have been okay with the Pinchmore of the Flash. Mm-hmm. And you know what we haven't talked about? Amy Adams. What were your thoughts on her? She was okay. Well, she was all right. Her stuff seemed very separate to the rest of what was going on. There was a lot of her just around, you know, the Superman house and her own house having visions. And she was visited by that guy that Batman saw. I don't know. Her stuff was kind
of
mediocre. I really love her. She's one of my favorite actresses. But
the
scenes she was a part of and just were attached to a part of this film I did not love.
It's a real shame, because I think she was one of the better parts of... I mean, I don't have an issue with any of the casting in any of these movies, really. Possible reserve judgment for Jared Leto. But, I don't think Amy Adams has really been able to do Lois Lane right since Man of Steel.
And yeah, but this she's great in that. And I think that's why I was disappointed.
I mean, there's also this horrible this horrible shot where she gets up and she opens her nightstand drawer and there's a pregnancy test there. Wink, wink, wink.
Yeah, that was lame. And lame.
Did you happen to catch the name of the company that manufactured the pregnancy test?
Is it? No, what was it?
Force Majeure.
Oh, okay.
Now, you're married. Can you imagine the wife going out to buy a Force Majeure brand pregnancy test?
No, I can't. I cannot.
Is that like the... Like, I'm starting a pregnancy test company. What am I going to call my pregnancy test? How about Force Majeure?
And I think all around, I think there could have been stronger women roles in this film. There was Wonder Woman, but more Amy Adams would have been cool. Here's the thing. I thought Amber Heard, I thought she was fine. I thought Mara was good. Not a huge role, but I thought her scene was great. I don't understand why people hate her. You know, well, Johnny Depp thing, I guess, but
it's you know. Almost exclusively the Johnny Depp thing.
Yeah, I don't know if that's fair.
It's not fair because people are. This is getting way off topic, but I mean, people are watching that. What happened in that relationship? Like it was a reality show. Like it was freaking Vanderpump Rules or something. And
yeah, that's,
you know, you don't. Nobody knows what goes on in a marriage, but I like her as Mira. She was really great in the Aquaman movie too.
Yeah. But yeah, again, she wasn't in this one too much. But from what I saw, I enjoyed it. Same with J.K. Simmons. I would have been okay if James Gordon was in it more.
You mean Jim Gordon? Yeah.
Yeah, James Gordon.
Well, I hear James Gordon. I think about the singer in War II Guelph City Councilor.
But his name is James Gordon.
I understand. But I mean, I have no issues with the casting at all.
I think J.K. Simmons is great as that. I think it though, him being James Gordon, right? And what's his name doing the upcoming Suicide Squad? What's that? You know what I'm talking about? Do you know what is his name? The upcoming Suicide Squad guy, director.
Oh, James Gunn?
Yeah, James Gunn. He's like they've both done Marvel too. How is this allowed? How are they doing this? I don't understand. And it's weird. I'll view him less now as his character in the Spider-Man ones.
You know what? Here's something that'll really break your mind. Jaimin Hansu is a character in Aquaman, but he was also the old wizard in Shazam. Which is insane.
That's fun though. That's fun. I guess. I don't know. It's weird. But.
I know what you mean. It's interesting though because I think Hollywood's kind of going that way where you are part of a franchise, and if you're part of one franchise, you might as well be part of two franchises. And I mean, we talked about Promising Young Woman last week on the show. And what happened like a couple of days after not that it was a coincidence that it was a couple of days after we did that episode, but Emerald Fennell, who is the writer and director of Promising Young Woman, what's her next thing that she's working on? Oh, she's writing the script for a Zatanna movie, which is another character in the DC universe. She's a wizard, and it's, you know, she's part of like the Justice League Dark team, which is a team that includes, you know, John Constantine and Swamp Thing and Dead Man. And it's just like, you can only do these things now. You are Emerald Fennell. You make an Academy Award nominated movie. It's a small budget thing. It's universally praised. What are you going to do now? I'm going to write a superhero movie. And again, like I feel like I should be living in Nirvana. Because I collected comic books as a kid. I was also a big comic book nerd. I still have most of my comic books.
Yeah, your comic book.
They're in my... I'm pointing at them right now. You can't see.
How many... do you have any that could, like, sell now for...
Oh, yeah. I've got a few old ones. Not in the greatest condition, but, I mean, leaving that aside, I should be in paradise. But I'm getting... incredibly more and more frustrated this. Like Emerald Fennell, Academy Award winning, or not winning yet, but Academy Award nominated filmmaker, all we can give her is a superhero movie instead of like saying, here's a big budget. What do you want to do? That's kind of disappointing. And
what are your thoughts then on Nomadland? It's the same thing. She's the next director for the next big Marvel one, Immortals? Or yeah, Immortals. What are your thoughts on that?
Eternals. Well, it's kind of the same thing. Yeah, it's Eternals, not Immortals. Although they are Immortals. So it's,
yeah, exactly. That's why I said it.
I don't know. I mean, I'm glad that Chloe Zhao made some bank, but it's at the same time, it's a similar problem that, you know, she kind of made No Man's Land and then went to Eternals, and they just happen to be coincidentally coming out in the same year. But
yeah,
it's frustrating. And I will say about this, because we are kind of running out of time, but like Zack Snyder's next thing is Army of the Dead, which comes out on Netflix in May. It's a zombie movie. It's the first time he's done a zombie movie since he did Dawn of the Dead, the Dawn of the Dead remake. It stars Dave Bautista. It's like a heist film and a zombie movie. And I am really looking forward to seeing that because, I don't expect it to break any new mold on the zombie genre. It's
He is good at that, though.
But I mean, I expect it to be fun, and at the very least, it's like an original thing. And I expect it to be maybe like a little Aliens-esque with like the team of mercs and all that. But at least it's not Superman, and at least it's not Spider-Man, or you know.
Yeah, he's not perfect with superheroes, and honestly, that's not even a bad thing about him. I think a lot of it is just he has his own style, and that's what he needs to make films with, and it's not always what works for superhero mm-hmm. films.
Well, I think that's it. I think it's very rare to get a superhero movie that a director has put his or her stamp on. Mm-hmm. A lot of this is like Marvel has an in-house design team, so you're like, you walk in, your team is more or less already assembled. It is very rare. Like, you don't get a Batman Returns anymore, where it's just like, it's a Tim Burton movie that happens to be about Batman. It's just nobody, like Zack Snyder may be the last person who can kind of come in and put a distinctive stamp on a comic book movie. And I mean, that in a sense is also sad too.
Yeah. But. Hey, at least it got the good Rotten Tomatoes reviews, huh?
Again, least, you know, maybe to finish up, what I will remind people is, and I took the time to look up the numbers, Batman v Superman and Justice League theatrically together made $1.5 billion. Jeepers. Aquaman by itself made $1.1 billion.
Yeah, Aquaman. Yeah, well, it was high quality. It was
good. And so. So what I will say is, there are two explanations for this. Number one, because Batman v Superman and Justice League both had like the three most well-known, most popular superheroes, either A, Zack Snyder's vision did not appeal to a majority of people, because both of those movies should have made $1 billion on their own.
Yeah.
Or two, there was a strong undercurrent of desire for an Aquaman movie that nobody knew about. Which one of those is the more likely scenario?
Yeah.
People rejecting Zack Snyder's vision or people really, really loving Aquaman? You be the judge.
I'd say the first probably.
I say that's a safe bet.
Yeah.
Anyway, Peter, if people want to find you on the internet somewhere... Where
yo, as per usual, Mr. Towerack, yo, YouTube and Twitter, and then on the TikTok, Peter Wesley Salmon, my full name.
And that's it for this week's show. We hope you liked it, and if you want to listen to it again, you can find it on our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. Download it from the Guelph Politicast channel every Friday on Podbean or through your favorite podcast app at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Speaking of Spotify, you can find the playlist for the music you hear on End Credits in Spotify. Just open the app and search for End Credits on CFRU. You can find us on social media on Facebook at End Credits Radio Show and on Twitter at End Credits Radio. I will be back here tomorrow at 5 p.m. for News and Politics on Open Sources Guelph with Scotty Hertz. In the meantime, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson. You can find my news and politics site at guelphpolitico.ca, or you can read my writing about horror movies at Nightmare on Film Street at nofspodcast.com. And stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be back next Wednesday at 3 p.m. for more end credits, and we will see you then.